Hello, and welcome to Flop Pod. It's Lynn here, and we're doing things just a little bit differently in 2021. We are so excited to partner with RCAT and Live Magazine to interview Moms Girls. Our actual video episode is going to air on Monday, February 1st on RCA's YouTube channel, so totally check that out, and it's going to be staying up for all time to come, I guess. What we're doing on the podcast is we're actually going to break up that larger interview into sections, and we're going to share small bits of the interview. The video is about an hour long, but we probably chatted with Moms Girls for about 3 hours, so there's lots of content to go around. Check us out on YouTube on February 1st. Be sure to check out Moms Girls and their show, Moms Girls Gone Wild, playing at the Hall starting Thursday, March 18th to Saturday, March 20th. And now, check out our interview with Andy Bowman.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Mark.
Welcome to Flop Pod.
Woohoo! The slumber party edition.
From the living room.
That's right. Who are we talking to today, Mark?
We're going to be talking to a fantastic group of folks. They're really funny. They got a lot of heart. And they are Moms Girls.
And Moms Girls are Andy Bowman, Elizabeth Hicks, Steph Curran, and Allison Kelly.
Yes.
So we're going to start chatting to each one of them one by one, and we're going to invite Andy on over to the couch.
Okay.
Woo!
Great to be here.
Hi, Andy. Why don't you tell us about your arts origin story and how you came to be part of Moms Girls?
Okay. I'm like in the beginning. I did theater and things like that in school. I guess that's where I first started, but just doing like lip syncs. And I used to have a magic act. Where I would, it was like Andy Bowman's magic act, and my little sister Alexis, who was like 3 years younger than me, would come on stage, and she was my assistant, little Boldini, or that, it was Sarah actually, and that was like probably my first time on stage.
How
was this
old
magic
were you?
Act. 9, and Sarah would have been 6.
Because I was literally picturing you like now.
Yeah.
Doing it.
Well, the pictures were really funny. I had a black top hat. And I had a cape, and Sarah had a little top hat, and we did it for our school variety show, and it was a lot of lip syncs, and, like, none of the tricks worked, and one of the things was I was supposed to, like, whip her cape, and I had this plan for where the cape would go, but I ended up just, like, choking her on stage. So it was, like, a really bad magic act. But I loved being the center of attention, but I didn't have, like, an outlet. I wasn't a good singer. I wasn't in dance. My parents couldn't afford it. So, like, doing stuff for the variety show was, like, this fun thing. And then when I got a little older, when I was in Girl Guides, I did Emily New Moon. So it was, like, a stand-in for Martha McIsaac, who was Emily.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I did, like, voice work. And I honestly, the saddest thing is that to this day, I think that's the most money I've ever made per hour. I was, like, 11. And so I did that for a year or two, and that was cool. And then I didn't really do anything theater-wise or acting or anything like that until I was in high school. And then I was in high school play. And I just sort of, I don't know, there just wasn't a lot of that. I wasn't around it. I had a lot of energy. So my parents were always like, put me in sports. Because they were just like, someone make her tired. And when I was in university, I did the Vagina Monologues. And I was in a couple of plays that my university put off. And I really, really loved it. And then I did a few commercials when I was in university, like on PEI, ADL Milk. What's the line? You've never had chocolate milk like this. Yeah. So I did stuff like that. Which is so silly when you think about it. Anyway, but I just never, the thing is, I love attention, but I'm not very talented. But when I was in university, later, when I was doing my master's, I started going to a lot of stand-up comedy shows. And I had friends who, a couple of my friends were in Picnic Face, which was a big sketch comedy group in Halifax at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd go and I'd sit in the back of the, like, comedy shows, and I was just kind of obsessed with stand-up. And it got to the point where, like, the comics doing stand-up were like, you just have to try it. Like, you really just have to do it because, like, it's sort of scary to us that you're always here when you're not doing it. Like, I was such a fan. So I started doing it, and it kind of, you know, it took a little while for me to understand, like, I had to write material. I would just kind of get on stage and, like, be my... You see a lot of that when people are starting stand-up for the first time. They do get on stage, and, like, they're just naturally funny, so they just, like, bring that to the stage. But then after a couple weeks, you're like, oh, actually, I need to write a joke. So, yeah, and I had some good girlfriends over there that I started doing, like, stand-up with regularly, and... just had a lot of fun with it. And I took some years off from that and moved over here, and I sort of focused on food. Like, I worked as a chef. And then I eventually made my way back into doing stand-up here. But it's tough. Like, stand-up's a tough world. It's like there's no path. You can't see what you're working towards. It's hard if you're not good at branding. Like, it's just kind of a tricky thing. It's not like you can take workshops and grow. Like, there's not a lot of, like, community around it. It's just, like, go to a lot of open mics is what you're always told. That's not, like, I can't take a lesson, you know? Like, you just go and do it. And so when these guys asked me to join Mom's Girls, and they didn't even ask me, they asked me to come and do a show, like, I just remember thinking, like, I cannot screw this up because, like, if I can make these girls like me, I think we're going to be best friends forever. And I just felt like I had something to offer. And now that I'm older, I always told myself I didn't have any talents. I couldn't sing. I couldn't dance. I really don't think I can dance. Like, I'm all elbows.
Everyone can dance. Everyone can. It's what I make my living on. I promise. Everyone can dance.
I really want to take a class with you because when you say it, I believe it. But if I was to leave here, I'd be like, wow, Lynn really sold that lie earlier. As soon as you're not here, I don't believe that. I just really can't. Like, if someone is like, here's the beat, I'm like, is it here? Is it here? Is it here? Like, I don't know where to find it. Like, I don't, you know, give me a map to where the beat is. And I would be like, what? This map doesn't make any sense. I don't know. But I would like to take class from you because I actually... I like you, and I think you could teach me.
Well, thank you. Yeah.
But what I found out with these guys, and what I found out in the last couple of years, is if I take my time and slow down, I actually do have a talent, and that is telling stories. I'm a good writer. If I slow down, I'm a good writer. And I'm good at interviewing people and talking to people and figuring out how to tell a story. And I just didn't know that storytelling could be a talent. Mm. It just took a long time to get there.
Mm. I think everything is storytelling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a big theme that comes up a lot with people that particularly, I think, have longevity in their careers. Like, we've been able to talk to a number of people, like 25, 30 people now, and that really seems to be it. The people that are in it for the long haul are able to see the story and see where it is and where it needs to go. So that's super awesome.
It's I actually wrote about storytelling in my application letter to for Dow Architecture School. About, like, trying to about, like, architecture and storytelling and just, like, oh, like, the idea of, like there is a narrative with a building. There's a narrative with your experience of the building. It's all about storytelling.
That's awesome. Do you think there's a narrative with every building or just some buildings? Because some buildings feel like there's no narrative.
Or it's, like, a tragedy.
Yeah, it was a bad story, and we didn't need to hear it.
I think there is a narrative to every building. There's a firm in Montreal. I forget their name off the top of my head now. But their whole ethos is that buildings set the scene for daily living. So if, you know, everyone talks about, oh, the movie of my life, walking around being, you know, the movie of my life. Well, that's actually the set for the movie of your life. So how do you want people to experience it? How do you want their narrative and sort of their character development to change and grow because of the surroundings and the space that they're in? And they do a lot of really, really cool... public architecture work with, like, public furniture and public lights and, like, using weather in interesting ways. I will remember the name of that firm at some point tonight, and I will blurt it out.
Feel free to, like, send it to me because I think that sounds really interesting.
It's super cool.
Yeah.
Andy, will you tell us about your flop? Just a little one?
Yeah.
Besides that magic show.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it had a charm to it. I can't think of, I feel like I'm so new to creating art that I haven't had any major flops, but I was at a stand-up show where someone threw a roll at me And my flop would be that I threw it back. And I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah. Like a dinner roll?
Like, I didn't get a good look at it, like, but I don't know if it was, like, a too, like, I'd say it was white bread. Yeah. Yeah. But I wasn't doing good, and I was like, oh, and then the worst thing when you're not doing good in a comedy set is to draw attention to it. So, and I was like, ooh, this is not going well. And then it was just like, it's blow, like, just kind of hit me. And it didn't like whiff. It was like a soft lob, but I definitely took some bread in the face and then I picked it up and I whiffed it at the audience. And I don't know why, like, it was not, and I can't really throw that good. So it just bounced on the floor. So that's my flop story.
That is amazing.
But I did learn from that. Which is, don't throw bread at the audience. No, you're welcome.
Oh my goodness.
Speaking of bread, what's your favorite slumber party snack?
Because you are a chef. Mm-hmm. And you have the background.
Mm-hmm. I really love to make crazy popcorn. I love air popping popcorn. I did. The girls are laughing because I really severely smoked out my house making popcorn for them recently. Like, Liz rushed in and was like, there's a fire! But I just forgot that I was popping popcorn. I do two crazy popcorns. I don't make them very often, but I do an everything bagel popcorn. Ooh. With, like, sesame seeds and onion flakes and sea salt and a little bit of lime. And it's really lovely. I also do a salted caramel sriracha popcorn. And that's really good. Yeah.
Oh, my God. What's yours? What's your...
Oh, favorite slumber party snack? Yeah. Oh, vanilla ice cream with marshmallow fluff and chocolate sauce. But that's like a Tuesday night.
Oh, it's your Tuesday night.
Tuesday night sleepover, that's it.
Yeah.
That's like...
I cast it away. Mine is
marshmallow fluff scares me a little bit.
Oh, it's like plastic, but it's so good.
It is like plastic.
What's yours? Mine is homemade pizzas. So if you have, like, a group of people over that can kind of decide on their own toppings, because that, like, you know, can be an area of discord, but I just think, like, it's so sweet, and then you all come out with your own little product.
Oh, I think that's cute, too. Yeah.